Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm John Ledyard from thedraftnetwork.com, along with Trevor Sekema, also from thedraftnetwork.com. Here at the end of bowl season, we can say that, right? The national championship game doesn't really count as bowl season, does it?
Right. No, I'm with you.
It's a separate
this is the end. This is the end of bowl season. Right. Once you get by the New Year's Six games, we're done.
What a horrible. I mean, I don't want to sound like football's football. I love football, but it just wasn't good, man. Like from Texas spanking Georgia, and Georgia clearly not being interested in the game. And I'm not taking away from Texas. Texas was fired up. They came out. They hit a lull in the middle of the game, but overall, I thought they executed well offensively. They did a lot of different things to challenge Georgia, but my gosh, the drops and from missing passes and penalties, and Swift fumbled twice, and I mean, it was just a total disaster on Georgia's end. They just looked like they could have cared less, and I wonder if at some point, when does that start to resonate with the NCAA? Like, you have all these players sitting out, and you have Georgia clearly not caring. And
well, what are they going to do?
Something's got to change, right?
You know, like you talk about like something's got to change, but like what changes? What's going to change? Because we're in an age where, you know, I feel like before, certainly there was the national championship. I get it. But it really feels like ever since they moved the national championship from the BCS to the college football playoff, because four teams get in and because it's a four-team tournament for the playoff, I truly feel like if you don't get in, you don't care. And I don't feel like that was always the case when it was the BCS, because when it was the BCS, it was almost like you could see it. You go like you could see it coming. You know, like even if this year was just the BCS, we would all know that Alabama and Clemson are playing for the national title. But right. But when it was like that, I feel like, and this is just a feeling, I have no facts for this, but it just felt like the other games, especially the games like the Rose Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, the Fiesta Bowl, all those kinds of things, they really did mean something to these teams. And now it just feels like because there is the college football playoff and because four teams get in, and it's like, You legitimately do have every single team in college football. Well, not every single team, UCF, but like every single team in college football, it feels like you have a chance to get in, at least within the realm of realism. You know, if you're not in a Power Five, you're just not going to get in. Right. But like all of those Power Five teams, it feels like you can get in. And then when you don't, it just feels like so much more of a disappointment than it did when it was in the BCS. Like even Ohio State, man. Ohio State even pumped the crap out of Washington and Rose Bowl, and it really wasn't even that close. And like, I didn't even think Ohio State played that well. They just Ohio State just looked like they could show up and beat Washington. And guess what? That's exactly what happened.
Right.
If Washington gave them any pushback at all, it really wasn't even going to be a thing. LSU actually cared about the Fiesta Bowl because there was the whole UCF national champions thing. Like, they actually cared about their bowl game, and you could tell.
And they knew they would get dragged if they were another SEC team.
Yeah, right.
Like, there was there was something at stake there.
That's why they cared for sure. Florida and Michigan, it was kind of a revenge game from when Florida played Michigan a year ago. So there was, you could tell. But like Georgia, Texas,
I think the smaller bowls matter more in some ways.
Right, but right. I think
because those guys knew they weren't getting into that. A lot of those teams knew they weren't.
So is the only solution here going to an 18 playoff?
I think it's the biggest solution, the best solution probably, but I don't know that it's a cure-all or anything. You know, you're still going to have – but you can't stop it all, but I think even more than – you know, you talk about the effort with Georgia, and we had kind of heard anyway that there were some maybe focus issues with Georgia this season and who were the leaders and – you know, that kind of stuff existed there. And you could really tell. I mean, they went out in games like they slept with Tennessee. They got a couple lucky bounces, but they were sleepwalking through a lot of that game. And, you know, I watched them every week. They're just not a motivated team on a consistent basis. Bama was, they were up for that game, obviously. You know, you're up for Bama, no doubt. But it was not going to be surprising to me if they mailed it in for this last game. And so, I think that you can't always get away from that per se with every team. I don't think that's generally the mindset of every team. My bigger thing is, okay, we had, 30 players sitting out bowl games. Next year it's going to be more, for sure. 2 years ago it was like two players. Next year's going to be more. You're going to have more every year. And you're going to have more underclassmen declare for the draft every year, which is going to bump those numbers up.
you give them a shot at the playoffs.
Right. That is why I think, and there's still going to be some players that sit out bowl games. True. But
for sure,
a lot of the top players are coming from the top eight teams in the country. Let's just be honest.
Right. You're not going to leave your team hanging for a national championship.
Will it ever happen? Might, but yeah.
But I'm with you because if I'm looking at this, the two teams that didn't show up the most for their bowl games were Georgia and Ohio State. And like, that's just the way that it is. Ohio State, I mean, Washington's not good at all.
Oh yeah. So if this were a playoff game, Ohio State would have beat Washington by like 40 points.
Right. And I mean, like, what? I mean, let's face it, with 12 minutes to go left in the game, it was 28-3. Like, the game was not even close. Ohio State literally just showed up and won the game. Georgia just showed up, and Texas actually wanted to play in this game. Mm-hmm. Georgia did not. Georgia wanted to be in the national championship.
Well, Texas heard that talk about how Georgia should have been in the playoff, and they were an afterthought.
And that too. And you know what? I guess, in a sense, this attitude has always somewhat been in college football and in sports in general when you have this. But it is certainly, I really do think it has been multiplied, magnified, whatever you want to call it, since the four-team playoff came out. And if you do expand it to eight, that is one of the selling points, is that you look at some of these teams and these top players that didn't make it, and you look at the guys sitting out, you go look at the team not caring, you look at all this kind of stuff. Because, you know, look, man, what does Georgia give a crap about the Sugar Bowl?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. And the thing is, you practice for 4 weeks for a game that don't matter. Mm-hmm. When all you hear about on ESPN, on College Football Live, when you go on Twitter, when you go on Instagram, is the four teams that are playing and how you just barely got left out. Right. That's a factor.
Yep, no doubt about it. I think it's something the NCAA is going to have to consider with all this, you know. And I think eventually we're going to see that move to an 18 play. I just don't know how it's avoidable. I know they've already kind of said there's talks that are starting up on that end, so I'll be really curious to see how quickly that all unfolds and how quickly we get to a format like that. How about from a scouting perspective in these games? Did anything stand out to you in these matchups? I mean, I felt like, especially yesterday's games, you know, I felt like Dwayne Haskins solidified things. You know, not that I expected him to be bad, you know, I thought that in this game, you know, he was very solid, you know, took a lot of underneath stuff, not necessarily any great throws, and it's kind of how the offense has gone all season. My big question with Dwayne Haskins is big time throws, you know, high degree of difficulty throws down the field. When he goes down the field, he's generally accurate, but he doesn't put a lot of pace on the ball when he does. You know, there's not this rocket arm, you know, to fit in tight windows down the field. He's not really a super aggressive passer like that. I think he has good physical tools, but it's just not who he is as a passer right now. He likes to see guys open down the field. He doesn't really put it into tight windows or throw with a lot of anticipation down the field or anything like that. So I question the ceiling with Dwayne Haskins some, not physically, but so much. But systematically, I don't think that's his playing style, you know, or stylistically, I should say. So I question that a little bit with him, but I definitely think he can be a good starter in the NFL.
I do too. I mean, I thought he had a fine game. He was not the most impressive guy, even from Ohio State. The guys that stood out to me when I watched that Ohio State game were Mike Weber, actually. Mike Weber had a great game. Yeah. And I went into the season thinking that Mike Weber was just a guy. And, you know, he kind of is. But if you're talking about top end just a guys, day three guys that you want to have on your roster, you know, like,
We're living in an NFL, man, where Gus Edwards is running for 800 yards and averaging 5.5 yards a carry for the Ravens.
So, like, Mike Weber's an NFL player, man. I mean, he's going to be a day three pick, but I'd be cool with him as a running back on my team. Brendan White, the safety, he's a sophomore, but he was really good in that game. I thought he had some nice moments of safety, recognizing things in coverage and anticipating what Jake Browning was doing. I think he had an interception on the 2-point conversion that he almost took back to the house because he's got some wheels. And then the two interior defensive tackle guys. I'm not a big Draymond Jones guy, but I thought that he flashed at his high ends in that game. He put on some moves on Washington's offensive line, and he was getting off the snap quick. I know he's like 285, so you know, that's, again, we get into the conversation of, all right, how many defensive tackles are doing it at 280, 285? Okay, Aaron Donald, that's one guy. So you wonder how the weight is going to be with him, because speed is Draymond Jones's game. Mm-hmm. And what worries me is that if you're going to pack some more pounds on Draymond Jones to get him more into the common weight level of interior defensive linemen, how much speed, how much explosiveness and quickness is he losing? Because that's the part of his game that he boasts the most. So that's a little bit of a projection there. And then I got to say, man, Robert Landers, I like him.
You've liked him the whole time, man.
I like Robert Landers.
He's been your guy.
There are a couple. I noticed that he was out there with the ones when they went out for the first series. Ohio State rotates their linemen a lot, He was out there with the ones, and there were a couple times where he was just doing, you know, push pulls, ripping guys off him, getting into the backfield quick.
He reminds me of Puna Ford, actually.
Which is funny because I was like against the Puna Ford hype last year. I just didn't see it, but maybe I just watched the completely wrong games of Puna Ford, because Landers he's going to go into the game. You know, if somebody asked me throughout the draft process, hey, who's a sleeper guy that you like? I'm going to say Robert Landers with a couple of other names. And so
redshirt sophomore or junior? I forget, but
I think he's a redshirt sophomore. Let me look.
Either way, he's definitely got eligibility left. So, I don't know if a guy with his lack of production declares. A year ago, he had decent production, even though he barely played. But this year, I don't think
they rotated heavy this year. Right. I felt like he was not in the lineup at all.
But he's like, I think about him and I'm like, a small, squatty guy, you know, in this defensive line class, like, why would you come out? I just, you know, without great production and without a full, you know, next year you'll play more. I don't know if he comes out, but he does flash. He's got a good first step for a guy who plays He really does. He's got some explosive traits. So he's going to be a really interesting player. I'll have to take a deep dive if he comes out. The guy who stood out to me, I'm going to sound boring because everybody already knows, but Josh Allen is just ridiculous. Like, I mean, he got 3 sacks against Penn State. This dude has 17 sacks on the season. I mean, what are we even doing out here? And it's not like he got a ton of them in one game. He has a sack in like every game this year. He has like 6 or 7 games with multiple sacks. I mean, he's just
crazy production.
Yeah, and like he.
To be fair, I was watching one of his sacks that he had against Penn State, and he was like completely unblocked.
The
and
first
I'm like,
one, yeah.
I'm like, what are we doing? Like not blocking Josh Allen?
Right, right.
Like, what are y'all doing?
The second
what
one,
are y'all doing?
The second one came on an inside twist, but Penn State picked it up and he clubbed the center aside and swam over him. I was like, whoa. Now, I don't think it was any vicious club. That center should get his weight up, but. It was still like, wow, I mean, this guy like is using hand usage. Like that was, it's just crazy. Having scouted him a year ago and just like, he didn't have anything, man. I watched so many of his games, was like, this guy doesn't do anything. Like what is his role? And I know everybody kind of felt that way, like talking to, you know, Dane Brugler and everybody just kind of like, what does this guy do? He's versatile, I guess. Like he could hypothetically do a lot of different things for you, but I don't know if he's great at anything and looked like a guy who was going to be a fringe top 100 guy, maybe if he tested great, but... This year, it's like, I mean, they're talking about him today as rivaling Nick Bosa, which is straight up nuts, but...
it's not true.
Yeah, it's not true. No. Bosa, as long as he's healthy and everything, is going number one. I mean, he's going to be the first edge off the board. But yeah, I think Josh Allen's definitely
like how you clarified
himself
that.
In the top. Yeah, because you never know with quarterbacks and even Quinnen. And so I'm not going to paint myself into a corner, but...
Uh-huh.
Why? You think I should?
No, I just, you know.
I think he's going to be the first edge off the board.
Nick Bosa had none of us, I don't think, at the Draft Network have had any player in any of our mock drafts go number one other than Nick Bosa.
Right.
At all. We've been doing mock drafts every single Monday since August. Yeah.
And I won't until it's confirmed that there is strong interest in a quarterback or I hear that there, you know, I. You know, and somebody trade. And if I'm projecting trades, obviously with the Cardinals picking first,
Do I have the next mock?
I think you might. I can't remember. I have to ask Joe. I think you do though. If I'm guessing. Maybe I don't think it's me already. But yeah, no. I think that next mock for me, I'm going to start pulling out some trades personally because you got to juice this thing up. I mean, but anyway, we digress. Except to say that Josh Allen is. I don't know. I mean. With the teams that need an edge pass rusher in the top five right now, you know, the Jets, the 49ers, or the 49ers are 2, the Jets at 3, the Raiders at 4, I don't know. Like he is the type of player that fits there. You know, he would fit any of those teams, I think. He is unbelievable. From a three-point stance, Josh Allen is more explosive than he is from a two-point stance. There was one game this year where I saw him in a three-point stance a ton. I forget what game it is. I have it in my notes. I forget, but he was just, I mean, they couldn't stop him. They couldn't block him. He was so explosive up the arc. So I'd almost like to see him put his hand down and rush more. But, I mean, he can be effective from either, which is another part of what makes him such a diverse scheme fit, I think. So he was unbelievable against Penn State, though. Late in the game, Kentucky's dropping him into coverage when Penn State's driving. I'm like, what are y'all doing? Like, this guy's 17 sacks.
Yeah.
Roll him up. It's crazy. I don't know.
Roll him up.
Felt like this was peak Trace McSorley, and it wasn't good enough, which is pretty much my point.
Okay. You
know what I'm saying? Like, I think Trace McSorley will make it in the league somewhere. I don't know if he gets drafted, but I think he makes it somewhere in the league. I think he's got enough. But
what do you mean by that?
I think he holds a job in the NFL, like as a backup, not as a starter, you know, or preferable starter. You don't think? I mean, there's some bad moments.
I go back and forth.
I do too.
It really is just going to depend on what team drafts him first, I think.
Yeah. Who gives him, what the roster looks like, how many other guys there are ahead of him, you know.
Yeah.
Because the trick is with McSorley, I think he's smarter and he does some things and he offers athleticism too, which is nice, in leadership. And I think he'll work hard and teams love that in backup quarterbacks. They love a little athleticism. They can mix up the plays, give defenses something that they don't normally prepare for with that offense. Maybe with the starter.
Do they?
I think so. Oh, yeah.
I don't.
More and more, especially in today's NFL. I think there's more and more teams that are doing stuff like that. Who would have thought that Baltimore would be doing a team with Joe Flacco?
Okay, but Baltimore is different. Baltimore is different.
Why? They had Joe Flacco. Don't a team use, with Joe right, Flacco
don't
is...
Don't use Baltimore as the example. They had the most dynamic player in college football who was a Heisman winner who they picked in the first round. That's different. We're talking about a guy who might go round 6 or 7.
But I'm saying, like, schematically.
You don't keep that guy on the roster if he's anywhere near a contrast to what your actual quarterback is. Taysom Hill is the only other one that comes to my mind, and he's this weird X-factor dude that Sean Payton goes mad scientist with.
Well, I feel like the diversity of what Baltimore's done with Lamar Jackson is going to encourage teams to say, look, we can threaten defenses in multiple ways with a guy who's more dynamic with the ball in his hands as our other option if something were to happen. And
yes, I guess I'll believe it when I see it with the old ass NFL, but
some of them
my thing is that I hear you, and like that would be a smart thing to do with a guy like McSorley, but I don't know how many coaches do that, because when it comes to backup quarterbacks, it seems like the only thing most coaches care about with a backup quarterback is just do your job, like dependability, like that's it.
Work ethic, smarts,
right? Like
prepared,
I don't. Nobody's professionalism. There are not many teams in the NFL that are looking to make their backup quarterback dynamic. It just ain't. It just is not a trend. That's why when I'd say it really depends where McSorley either gets drafted or maybe the second team that he's on, that will matter a lot. Because if neither of those teams give him the legitimate chance to be, like you said, a scout team guy or a potential mismatch guy, a package player. Who knows? If neither of those teams do that, he'll get cut by both teams and then nobody else in the league is going to sign him. Mm-hmm. He'll just be out of the league.
Yeah, so I don't want to sound like I'm advocating for Trace McSorley either, because I'm not really a big fan or
just,
anything. But
just hoping the NFL is on an upswing when it comes to doing things that could actually confuse defenses.
And I think they are. I really do. I think predominantly we're seeing more and more. It's not every team yet, but I think we're seeing the NFL's shift change. We're seeing them kind of shift to a new way of thinking in some spots anyway. And so you're right. The team will matter for sure. But I think he's got enough of everything else to kind of maybe stick it out somewhere, you know. But I thought this game was, you know, in some ways it was like, man, the guy's putting a lot to the program. And it was a really cool moment when they were coming back and they scored a bunch of points in a very short amount of time. And, you know, he's like walking the sideline, you know, just like screaming to the Penn State fans. Like it was just it was a cool moment. I had some chills, you know.
He's a great college football player.
Yeah, he was fun. He was what fans really like to cheer for. And I know he hurt his foot in this game and toughed it out too. And so I hope personally, I know he's not one of the eight best quarterbacks, senior quarterbacks in my opinion, but I would like to see him in Mobile. I want to see what he has to offer in Mobile. So I hope he's okay for that. Josh Allen wasn't the only top defensive player that showed out in this game. I don't know if you watched any of the Mississippi State-Iowa game, but Jeffrey Simmons was just a straight monster. The first play of the game, a tackle for loss. The third play of the game, a sack. And he was in the back. I mean, he finished with 2.5 tackles for loss. Had a hurry. Consistently getting pressure. Just wreaking havoc on the inside. And he was just pumped up before the game, too. So, continue to see big things from him. Mostly quiet day for Montez Sweat. I felt like they handled him pretty well. And I don't know about you. I personally continue to kind of have some concerns with Montez Sweat. I don't know how.
I'm just not as high as on him as.
Yeah, the first round talk is just not something I can get behind. I like some of what he offers, but I just don't see a path where Montez Sweat is better in the NFL than Brian Burns or Josh Allen or obviously Nick Bosa. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I don't see him being in the league with those guys. You know, in like that same group with those guys. I just don't know if the speed bend that you need from top pass rushers is really there with him. And I think you need that athleticism. So those were the guys that I was really watching in that game. Also, and this is no surprise to you, Jonathan Abrams mad at me. I don't know if you saw that or not. The safety.
He what?
The safety from Mississippi State. He's mad at me.
He's mad at you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You like him.
I do kind of like him. He has issues, clear issues. He blows a lot of coverages.
He found your tweets?
Oh, yeah, yeah. After the game, yeah. He was not too happy. We talked it out. It was good. I think it was therapeutic for him. He had, that was a disappointing, frustrating loss. He's a highly motivated guy who plays really hard. He talked it out. He said he understood at the end, But, I mean, he blew the coverage because he was looking into the backfield. And I said he's undisciplined in coverage. And I meant with his eyes, his eyes are undisciplined. He's looking into the backfield. His eyes should be on his guy, and his guy runs by him, and he steps up on play action. And got suckered badly. Like it was uncontested, 15 yards of separation type of deal. And that's the kind of stuff you see when he loses the ball, he loses his man in phase, but around the line of scrimmage, he's explosive. He's athletic. He is such a physical football player. And I love that about him. But I think he was undisciplined as in he was like wild or like it was a character issue, and I don't know why he made that parallel, but so once I cleared up that it was actually about a technique thing, he was a little more chill about it. But yeah, it was a mixed bag with him, which is really what it's been all season. And teams are going to have to weigh that. In some ways, I could see him being a riser because he has this unbelievable size and speed and physicality and tackles, and he's going to interview really well. He's a fired up guy. He's that kind of a motivator. Guy that brings it every single. Teams are going to like that kind of player. But, he just gives up way too much in coverage, especially down the field. So where do you use him, and is the spot you use him in valuable enough? I think those are the big questions moving forward.
Devin White was really good in the LSU game.
Was he? Okay, good, because I was flipping in and out of that game.
He was really good. I mean, LSU literally did not have a single secondary starter in that game once Delpit and the other dude got ejected.
Oh, right, yeah. Because
Greedy and Fulton already were not
Battle
playing.
Got hurt, and Delpit got ejected, and somebody else got ejected, right?
And somebody else got ejected.
So yeah. They were down like their top five DBs. No big deal.
Yes, yes. And so, Devin White really took care of business, I thought. He had a really, really good last game.
Yeah, he's going to be the first linebacker off the board. I feel very confident in that. If he's not, somebody is about to...
Depends who you call a linebacker, but yeah, for sure.
Wait, who are you thinking?
No, I mean just somebody? Like... Somebody's going to call Josh Allen a linebacker.
Oh, yeah, screw those people. Those guys are edge defenders. I'm talking about off-ball guys. He's going to be the first one, I think. And then I don't even know where the next one comes in. But I still have my concerns with Devin White, but there's also a lot to like about him as a football player too. And so he's going to be probably a little bit of a polarizing evaluation because there is some up-and-down moments on tape. But overall, I think pretty impressed with his play in his final game, it sounds like. And the last question I'll ask you, Trevor, this UCF game, man, what do you think? They finally lose, obviously.
Right.
LSU rolled up 547 yards of offense.
Yeah,
compared LSU, to like, dude.
Compared to like 195 or whatever USF or UCF had or something.
The score even, I know how the score was close. LSU like settled for field goals in the red zone like a bunch of times, I think.
Yeah. No, I mean like it's been a roller coaster just like being on Twitter for all of this, especially like living in Florida, because I follow a lot of people who are either like fans of the Buccaneers or the Lightning or the Gators or something, but are also like from Orlando. So I see a lot of UCF tweets, probably like more than normal people do, even if they think that their timeline's flooded with it. And I mean, like, all trolling aside, what UCF has done over the last 2 years is unbelievable. Right. Like, the fact that they went that many games without losing is, like, as the team and the program that they are, is unbelievable. And like, that is a seriously really cool accomplishment. I thought it was really funny because you and I talked about earlier in the show, LSU was 100% up for this game. They wanted to be the team to wear the national champion t-shirts. They wanted to be the team to write on the board like LOL national champs, which they did. I think in their hype video, they had like at the end of the game, there's a quote from, I think it's a player who just yells this out and he goes, "You're welcome, America." And so like the whole thing, the whole spectacle made college football, I think, really, really interesting over the last couple of years. But Mackenzie Milton was in this game, and UCF fans are forever going to say that if Milton was in this game, they would have won the game because it was only an 8-point loss. But I mean, LSU also was down their entire secondary, so there's things on both sides. I did not think that this UCF team could have beaten the top-tier teams in college football like last year's could have. Right. I really do think that last year's UCF team would have had at least a shot, and it would have been a fun game with some of the better teams in college football. I'm not saying they would have beat Bama or Clemson last year or something like that, but the rate at which they scored points and the way that Scott Frost had those guys running on offense, and even, you know, the NFL players on defense that we saw, I think they would have actually had a chance. Their roster was just not as good this year. They put up a crap ton of points because of the system that they had, because Milton and Mack were able to do what they needed to do, but they weren't going to beat the better teams, and I didn't really think that they were going to beat LSU. So
I thought they had a shot with all LSU's guys down with injury.
I thought they had a shot, but I still, I think I would have picked. I probably would have picked UCF.
I tell you what,
I think I would have picked UCF in this game.
I did not think LSU's offense or Joe Burrow was going to play that well. And I knew UCF had defensive issues, but man, I watched LSU the entire year. I just thought there was just not enough firepower
on defense. So
that was bad. That was bad. So. It was a fun slate in some ways. That game, I thought, added some intrigue. But overall, yeah, the bowl season, we just wonder, when's that prompt some renovation from the rest of the NCAA? I think it's coming sooner rather than later. We'll continue to have thoughts. We've got underclassmen declaring left and right. We're going to have to unpack and talk about a lot of those decisions tomorrow on the podcast. Obviously, we got Friday and the Super Show coming up as well for you guys. So until next time, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.